This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
It's my pleasure to welcome one of our clients to the show. It's David D'Ambrosio, and he is located in New Jersey and has an interesting story about his journey as an investor and some of his next plans, and talk a little bit about his recent 1031 exchange and so forth. David, welcome. How are you?
Great, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Hey, thanks for coming on. It's great. How long have you been listening to the podcast?
Probably a little bit over a year. So I've listened. I went back, though, and I listened to the older ones that I could get my hands on as well. So I've probably listened to maybe, I would say, probably about 300.
Wow. 300 episodes. And you're not sick of me yet. Well, thank you. That's great. Good stuff. Give us a little bit of your background and, tell the listeners what you do for a living, and kind of let's just dive into your journey as an investor.
Sure. So I am a physician. I'm an oncologist, a radiation oncologist specifically, and I'm the son of an immigrant, so I feel like I'm living the American dream. As long as that's going to last, who knows? But I always have had an interest in investing in general and educating myself about different types of investing, and I've always kind of come back to real estate in general because of all the things that we discuss on your podcast all the time. And I've read, a lot of real estate books, and I think a lot of people probably talk about that Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, which opened up some new thoughts in my head, especially the 1031 exchange they mentioned in that book. And my medical partner, Joe Latanzi, is the one that actually turned me on to your network because he had invested with you. And that's how I came specifically to your podcast. I spent a lot of time educating myself before diving in, and the method that I had started my investing with you was through this 1031 exchange.
So you were interested in investing, and you had a great immigrant story. I love that. And by the way, just to comment on your American dream, as long as it lasts comment, I think we all, unfortunately, and it really is no laughing matter, see the country taking the wrong direction in so many ways. But at the end of the day, it's all a game of comparison, right? It's not a question of whether America's gotten better or worse. Yeah, that's part of it. But it's just, compared to what is always the question. It's always a relative thing. Where is your family from, by the way?
So we're from New York City originally. My father came over on a boat into Brooklyn, and then I grew up in Queens, and I live in Jersey now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but where originally, like you say, the immigrant story? That's why I ask.
Oh, what part of Italy? My father was from a little town north of Naples.
Good stuff. Well, fast forward now. You learned a lot about investing. You listened to 300 of my shows or so. So thank you for that. And you did a 1031 exchange. Now, so what did you sell and what did you buy in that exchange?
Sure. So that story, the story with that was that actually the house that I had grown up in, my parents had retired a few years ago, and they were looking to sell the house. And my original plan was they were selling it to me. Obviously, I was getting a son discount. But my plan was actually to keep that house and rent it in New York City. And I would have had maybe a little bit of cash flow if I had done that. But that's when my eyes were opened, kind of at the same time I was listening to your podcast. And I realized that if instead of renting that long term, if I sold it and did a 1031 exchange, that I would greatly improve my cash flow and also my overall investment by, instead of just having one, switching that over to multiple properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you sold that property, and when did you sell it?
Towards the end of last year.
And you did a 1031 exchange on that, right?
Correct. So I transferred that into four properties in Orlando that I bought with your group. And, you know, the cash that I got out of that and put into those four new houses was enough that I was able to put even more than 25% down. So it was really a very good deal for me. And obviously not having to pay the tax on it was a big thing too.
Right, right. Yeah. Good stuff. So all in Orlando now. It's interesting you didn't want to split those up and get into two different markets there. I know you've got some other properties. Where else do you own? Or did you feel you were diversified enough already?
You know, I have four properties in Indianapolis as well. I really, really like the Orlando market because I feel like we're in a unique situation there that the value is so good for cash flowing. And I think there's a lot of upside potential for appreciation, and I ascribe to your philosophy. I'm not an appreciation investor, but I thought that it was a good idea for me to try to split myself up by putting more of my portfolio there. I think I'd like to get into one more market, but things are still settling down with that. But that was my thought process with Orlando. Seemed to be a nice combination of good cash flow, but also the potential for some appreciation down the line.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's a good decision. You know, one more market, get into three total, you'll just be super nicely diversified. So that's definitely a good idea.
The other issue with that too is these 1031 exchanges, when you're doing, in general, are a little complicated, but when you're trying to go from one property to multiple properties, it can get pretty hairy. And if I was trying to make sure that I had places set up in more than one location, I think it really would have complicated things for me with all the deadlines that are involved.
Yeah, that's true. That's true with the exchange. Did you have any trouble fulfilling your exchange? Were you worried at any point? I mean, the last two I've done, I did two of them last year. Actually, I should say the last three exchanges I've done, two of them last year and one this year so far. It's been kind of difficult. I've been worried, you know, coming down to the deadline on those exchanges. I did make it on all of them, thankfully, but I was worried that I might not, because it was a little bit hard to find properties.
Yeah, I was definitely worried about it. But what I did was, you're allowed to name, I don't remember the exact rules, I think you're allowed to name 250% more value of additional properties, not just the ones you take. So when I made my list, I picked about 10 properties, six more than the ones that I actually wanted. So in case any of them fell through for whatever reason, I could still pick up the other ones, so I didn't have to lose out on any of it.
Yeah, I know. They keep you, the IRS won't let you just identify the whole world, you know. I wish you could just give them a big list of properties, but they're too smart for that. They only let you, I think it's 200% possibly. It might be, I don't know, it might be 250, I can't remember. So if, in other words, if the value of the exchange is, say, $500,000, just to use a semi-round number example, then you could identify $1 million worth of property if the rule is 200%, by the way. Don't quote us on that, because neither of us are sure we can remember. And then you only have to close on $500,000, in other words, to meet your requirement. So in other words, half of the deals could fall through, and you would still meet the requirement and make the exchange without paying any capital gains tax, and you would have that nice deferral in there. So,
Right. Because you only have 45 days to do the identification, but you have 6 months to close. So you could cast a wide net and then narrow it down later.
Exactly.
The other thing I didn't realize about the exchange was I thought that the cash that you had to reinvest, I thought it was only the capital gains, but it's actually all the cash that you get from the sale. So I had put some money into renovating that house while I was renting it. And not that it was a big deal, but I just, for your listeners, you have to spend all of the cash. You can't take any cash out from that sale. You have to spend it all, even if it's not a gain. And you have to use at least the same amount of debt that you had on the initial sale.
Well, it's pretty awesome tax advantages. What do you see in your profession with other doctors and so forth? Are they really into real estate? You know, this is something that, I mean, highly paid professionals like yourself have just got to build real estate portfolios, because obviously you have a giant tax problem. And you know, thankfully you have great income, but I see a lot of professionals, doctors, lawyers. Well, lawyers don't even make that much money anymore a lot of times, unfortunately for them, but they're just not really doing this. They're not getting tax breaks for themselves and giving 40 some odd percent of their money away to the government. It's just tragic, really.
It's extraordinarily frustrating to try to educate people. It's, you know, these are people, men and women, that devote such a large amount of their time to educating themselves and to helping people, but they don't really have any real financial IQ. I can't tell you how many times I hear people talking about, you know, I called my stockbroker and this market crash and I just sold a bunch of stock. And, you know, I feel like half the time I'm on a soapbox telling them, you have got to invest in real estate. At least two or three times a day, I'm talking to people about it, trying to get other people involved. It really, you know, it really is an absolute no-brainer with the tax advantages, you know, not to mention these returns that you're getting on your cash when you leverage it are just, they're better than anything else out there, and particularly.
They sure are. Yeah. Leverage can become very addictive, that's for sure. Yeah, it's really incredible. Were you one of those people though? Because your partner in your business, the other doctor you work with, approached you and said, "Hey, you should be real estate investing." Or were you really open to it? Or were you one of the skeptical doctors out there?
No, I was always open to it. I just wasn't sure how to go about it. And he introduced me to the concept of your model where you don't invest locally. I was always thinking I would buy some houses near me, and you can't cash flow in New Jersey or New York. It's the property taxes here are ridiculous.
Tell us about that for a moment. Yeah, your taxes in New Jersey are some of the high. I think you have the highest property taxes in the nation, don't you?
Oh,
They're
we do.
insane.
I'm embarrassed to even say how much my property taxes are. My property tax on my house that I live in is a mortgage payment on, boy, it's a mortgage payment on probably six of my houses altogether
Wow.
that I own. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's bad.
That's crazy. Yeah, it really is. Anyway, what were you saying before I got you on the tax tangent, the property tax tangent?
I was just talking about how a lot of you know, a lot of physicians are just not educating themselves about finances. And you know, I try to talk to friends and colleagues about getting involved in this. And oh, I think you were asking about how I got interested specifically. I was saying I was always interested in real estate, but I wasn't sure how to go about it because you can't cash flow here. And my partner Joel Atanzi told me, you know, check out this Jason Hartman guy. So I started listening to your podcasts, and I haven't stopped. But the whole, you know, going to buying houses in other cities where they make sense, just, well, first of all, when I first looked at it, I couldn't believe how much cheaper it is to live in other parts of the country. Growing up in New York and living in New Jersey, for some of the houses that I own in Florida would probably be four times the amount if they were here.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I always wonder why doctors have that rap. You know, they say doctors are notoriously poor business people, and I think it's because they're, you know, is it like the science? You're a scientist, and scientists just don't think usually. I mean, some of them do, obviously, like yourself, but they don't think in the world of finance and money. It's just a kind of a different, it's kind of a different thought process or something, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but I think the other part of it is the whole way doctors typically think, which is that we it goes unsaid and understood that we have a fiduciary obligation that we do the right thing for our patients. And I think we assume that people that are trying to quote unquote help us invest our money are looking out for our best interests. And they don't have the time or the inclination to really delve into that and educate themselves about it any better than, you know, than they do, unless they have somebody that turns them on to it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And Wall Street just does such a better job of marketing than the real estate industry does. I mean, my industry is terrible at marketing. They have the most historically proven asset class, you know, the real estate people. They've got the best asset class, and they're just lousy at marketing it. And Wall Street has a really mediocre to terrible asset class, and they're fantastic at marketing it. So I think that with professionals and with highly educated people, the Wall Street world kind of, it just appeals to them because it's, you know, you can go see a guy wearing a nice suit and, you know, he's got a degree from a good college, whereas a lot of real estate people, they didn't go to college or they're certainly not dressed professionally a lot of times. And you know, it's sort of like a mom and pop industry, but it's such a good investment. It's such a good asset class. It's just a strange part of our society. It's always baffled me to some extent, you know?
Yeah, really, it's not sexy like the, you know, the guy on Wall Street, you know, spending $1,000 on a bottle of champagne. But I bet you if you look at his account versus an account of one of your clients, you're going to see a lot more wealth in there.
I agree with you. Unless the guy buying the $1,000 bottle of champagne on Wall Street is an insider. Now, he probably has a pretty good bank account, and he probably owns a lot of real estate. That's the irony of it. You know, the irony of these insurance companies that sell annuities and products like that is that they're all investing in real estate with that money. It's just such an irony to me that they take their insurance premiums and buy real estate, you know, especially office buildings. They seem to love office buildings, you know, large institutional investors, obviously. And I just thought that was really kind of just a total irony, you know, the way that works. But it is the way of the world. It is the way of the world. Well, do you have any questions for me that maybe, you know, some of our listeners might want to get answers to as well?
Well, you know, I think a big question for me is, where do I go from here? You know, I'm almost at my limit with traditional mortgages. And I know that there's some, you know, we always talk about, or you always talk about, and I read about how there's these portfolio lenders that will lend you above 10, but it's almost like this kind of black box where how bad are the rates when you go above 10, and should I just stop at 10 and wait and just keep doing 1031 exchanges? That's kind of what I'm struggling with right now, is where to move from here.
Yeah, so if you're at your 10 limit, if you're married and your spouse can qualify, your spouse has to have income and so forth, then you can do 10 more. That spouse can do 10, up to 10 more, which is great. But whether or not you can do that and you get to 20 properties that way, there are still some pretty good portfolio loan options out there, some community banks that will finance you. And I tell you, the rates aren't bad. I just talked to one this morning, actually, that will finance pretty good rates. Now, it's only fixed for 7 years in their case. And I think they're somewhere in the high fours. I mean, I don't know. That's not bad. Okay. It's certainly not as good as 30-year fixed at 4.5%, I know, but it's certainly not bad. I mean, to have a 7-year fixed and maybe by then you do a 1031 exchange, or there's a refi opportunity, or if the rates are insanely high and you have cash, pay it off, you know, which, you know, I'm not a fan of paying things off, but there are some times when it can potentially make sense. So,
well, these local lenders, though, it's my impression is that they really tend to want to lend to local people. Like, would they lend, let's say, for instance, I wanted to buy a property in the Quad Cities there. Would they lend to someone living in New Jersey but was buying property in their state?
Well, no, you're probably gonna go to a bank in that market, okay, where you're buying. Yeah. And these are these local community type banks that make really, a lot of them make really sensible loans. You know, they do financing that's just logical. It's not dictated by the government and, well, the government sponsored entities, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you know, the sort of pseudo governmental entities, I'll say. It's not dictated by them in that sense. You know, they'll do some really logical loans with usually 25% down, and they're not going to be 30-year fixed because they can't sell them off on that secondary market. But 7-year fixed, maybe 10 years if you're lucky. And the rate's very reasonable. I mean, I think this is a very good option. And then after that, you can decide, do you go to a B2R or Lima One? We had a representative from Lima One at our last event in Phoenix. They do some really logical, sensible loans too. They can do some good things for you as well. And there are some good options out there. You just, it takes a little more digging, and they're a little more fragmented, if you will, in terms of the choices and making decisions, but they're not too bad at all. Not too bad at all. Still good.
When you say 7-year fixed, it's still a 30-year amortization?
Yeah, 30-year amortization, and it will become adjustable rate in 7 years. And the reason they have to do that is because they're not selling it off to the secondary market. They're probably keeping it on their books, or they're selling it to another investor, not rather than this big secondary market of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that has very specific guidelines.
So let's say you did something like that, and you wanted to do a refinance of that into a more, can you do something like that where you refinance into a more traditional loan? Are you still constrained by that same 10 property limit?
Oh, no, because we don't know what the rule will be in 4 years or 7 years or 5 years or 6 years or anything in there, right? So the lending climate may become more liberal by then, or it may become more conservative by then. But the nice thing is you've got 7 years to watch and evaluate, and you're hopefully going to get a really nice return on your property for those 7 years. You could sell the property. You could refinance anywhere in between there. You know, in the old days, you could get an unlimited number of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans. But post-financial crisis, they first cut it down to 4, and then they raised it to 10. And they've stuck with that 10 number for quite a while. But who knows? That may become liberalized. You just never know what the future will bring in terms of financing options. And the other, you do have a risk, though, obviously. I mean, you know, it goes without saying, but I'll say it. You have interest rate risk, right? So the rates could go up, and then you'll be paying a higher rate. But if they do, and again, there's always lag time in here, but if they do, you'll probably see substantially higher rents and lower inventory of new housing being built. The problem is there's an adjustment period. There's a lag time to this. So, for example, if rates spike up tomorrow, it'll take a couple of years for rents to adjust, inventory to decline, and that's the part that kills investors. And this is why the prudent investor, in the long run, I believe, always wins the game, because they can ride out those adjustment periods, those storms, where the people that bought high-rise condos in Miami or San Diego or overpriced property in California or the Northeast, you know, they don't have that luxury that they can ride out that adjustment period, that storm, that lag time when everything is adjusting. But it ultimately always does adjust. It just takes a couple of years to see it happen.
Do you think that it's prudent or sensible to do a cash-out refinance if you can get significant money out due to the debt paying off or it appreciates a little bit, if that means you're going to take away your cash flow on a monthly basis? Or is that more of a personal decision, I guess?
Well, I'm probably going to say absolutely yes, but here are the questions I would have. What is the rate on that underlying mortgage you're refinancing compared to what are the rates today on the new loan you would be getting? And you might well get a lower rate or a similar rate. And then I would say definitely take the cash out, because the point is not, and this may sound really odd, and it takes, you kind of got to get your head around this, listeners, okay? Because I know a lot of you are going to say this is imprudent and it doesn't make any sense. And what are you talking about? I've heard it all before. But in a way, it's not really about cash flow, oddly. What it's really about is rent to value ratio, okay? So, for example, if someone told you could control $100 million of real estate tomorrow that had very good metrics, very good rent-to-value ratios, it rented for 1% per month, but because of the financing on it, it was fully encumbered and had zero cash flow, would you still want to own the $100 million worth of real estate? Absolutely yes, I hope you'd say that, right? The reason you'd want to do that is because you have other multidimensional things that will make you wealthy with that real estate portfolio. You don't have to get monthly cash flow. What you really want is a good rent-to-value ratio. And this is going to be a bit of a long answer, as my usual answers are. I know I've never been accused of being short-winded. But in the old days, when before the Great Recession, you know, some would say I was imprudent recommending this strategy. But we used to talk about something that I called the deferred down payment, okay? And the reason there would be a deferred down payment is, number one, the market was appreciating very quickly, and rents take a while to keep up and adjust to the appreciation. They lag appreciation, which always seems to happen faster. And you could buy properties with no money down, okay? So the question was in this equation, and I used to show this at my seminars on a spreadsheet. I use, you know, and I don't have it in front of me, and I don't remember the exact example, but the concept is this, that, you know, if you put 25% down, for example, the property could yield you maybe $300 per month in positive cash flow. But if you put nothing down, you would be zero cash flow, or you might even have negative cash flow. Now, the lenders won't even let you do this anymore, but in the old days, they would. And a lot of people listening will say, well, Jason, isn't that the reason we had a crash? Well, not exactly. Not on these types of properties. That wasn't the reason. The reason was is that people were using this strategy to buy stupid properties in Southern California or elsewhere that never made sense anyway, okay, because they had bad rent-to-value ratios. That's how you can tell if the deal makes sense, not by the cash flow, but by the rent-to-value ratio, okay? So the time horizon on this equation, this deferred down payment equation, was that it was basically about 9 years. So if you get your $300 a month, or you get zero per month, in the difference in the amount of money you put down, if you just kept that money in the bank and drew on it at a rate of $300 per month, and I don't remember the exact number, so you may be doing the math and saying, well, Jason, that's not 9 years. But the example I used to show, it was 9 years based on the interest rates back then and based on the rent-to-value ratio back then, and based on the down payment options back then. It was basically a 9-year break-even point. So I would rather have my 25% in the bank, in other words, your cash out refi, you have control of that cash, than have that $300 a month in positive cash flow. I mean, that's an easy decision for me to make in that way. I would rather have the property more leveraged with less cash flow, but more money under my control and in the bank, or giving me the ability to buy more and control more real estate. Does that make sense to you, or do I sound like I'm crazy?
No, that makes a ton of sense. Absolutely. That answers the question, sure.
You always really want to lean in favor, and it depends on the climate and the market, so no answer is ever completely simple. But you always want to lean in favor of the idea of equity stripping, pulling the money out of the property, having control of the cash, and still having control and ownership of the property. That's the beautiful thing about real estate. You can acquire the asset, put some money down to acquire it, and then later get all your money back out and still own and control the asset. I mean, where else can you do that? Yeah, and you don't have to pay tax on that borrowed money that you took out. It is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful asset class. I absolutely love it for not just that reason, but many others, as you know. So good stuff. So what are your plans next? You're going to get into a third market, it sounds like, right?
I'm going to think about it. I listened to the podcast on the Quad Cities, so I'm looking at that a little bit. I'm probably going to pump the brakes since I did so much this year, and maybe do something early next year, but I don't want to wait too long because I know the interest rates at some point are going to start going up.
It seems like they would have to, doesn't it? It's just,
yeah.
Crazy.
I've been saying that for five years.
Hey, I've been saying it for 10 years. So I've been wrong on my interest rate predictions. But I tell you, interest rates are very, very difficult to predict because they're basically set by fiat, you know, by Federal Reserve and government policy overall. The best place, and I want to get them on the show. I don't know if it's the best, but you know, it's well known in the world of interest rate and banking, is a newsletter called Grant's Interest Rate Observer. And I want to get a representative from that group on the show. I haven't done it yet, but they seem to have some pretty good insights into interest rates. But again, it's a roll of the dice. Nobody really knows. Not even Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve. She doesn't even know what she's going to do next quarter always. So We shall see. But David, thank you so much for being on the show and just sharing your story with our listeners and your experience. And we appreciate your business and just want to wish you continued success and happy investing.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.